Sean, I just checked the calendar. It is January 11th. It is 2023, and the Seattle Kraken still have not lost this year. Pretty amazing what they're doing right now.
It is amazing, and you keep on waiting for the wheels to fall off because that's what you're conditioned to do after the way that they played last year. And you look at their lineup and you're like, I'm not sure what I see there. And then they win again, right? They score a ton of goals. Because you look at them and you're like, who's going to score the goals? And you know, they score 5 goals a night. And, you know, they've been one of the best stories of the year so far, for sure.
It really is amazing, right? And I was hearing something about this the other day with the Kraken, who have won 6 straight games, 5 in a row on the road. They're 5-0 on this road trip as we record this on Wednesday. It's remarkable what they're doing. And you wonder, like, you look at it and say, what impresses me about the Seattle Kraken? And there's a lot of things you like. There's a lot of things that you can point to and say, hey, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. But there's not like one thing where you're like, well, I mean, that's the thing. That's why they're doing what they're doing right now. It's really just a collection of little things. Like, you know, Matty Beniers, he's an all-star, which is great. I mean, he's having a terrific season, 34 points. He's got 16 goals. He's going to the all-star game, all-star weekend in Florida, you know, early next month with for the Kraken. And that's great. Is he blowing your hair back? No, he's been good. You know, Andrei Burakovsky's been good. You know, Jordan Everly's been good. Vince Dunn, who I know in our Super 16, which runs Thursday, you wrote about the Kraken in it. You said he's their team MVP. I find that hard to argue. He's been great. But nobody's like out of this world. You know, they don't have a point per game player. You know, they don't have a 20 goals scorer, though McCann's close. Yet they just keep getting it done. It's just like a collection of parts that just keeps churning and keeps finding ways.
Interchangeable parts.
There you go.
Is what they are. From back in the day, for those of us that have been around long enough to remember the interchangeable parts. But it is that. And their goaltending hasn't been great. Like, you know, you're like, would I take either of those goalies if I was on a contending team? I don't know that I would. But they find a way every night to win. And credit to Dave Hakstol for the job that he's done. Certainly under a lot of pressure after last year, and he's responded, and he's found a way to give that team an identity and a system that works for them. And they're really, really hard to play against, and they're really hard to beat right now.
Dave Hakstol will not be going to All-Star Weekend to represent the Pacific Division. That's going to be Bruce Cassidy, the Vegas Golden Knights coach. So the coaches were announced today, Wednesday, as we record this, for All-Star Weekend. You know, it is Rod Brendamore from Carolina, Jim Montgomery, no surprise, from Boston, Peter DeBoer from Dallas, and Bruce Cassidy from the Vegas Golden Knights, all teams in first place right now. We have 32 players that have also been announced, and they are going to All-Star. We are scheduled to go to All-Star Weekend, February 3rd and 4th in Florida. We'll talk about the Capitals All-Star, Alex Ovechkin, with Tom Galitti. He's going to be joining us, our colleague from NHL.com, Washington, D.C. based, covers the Caps. So he's going to be joining us. But Sean, I wanted to go back quickly with All-Star before we get to Tom's interview and a few other things. I got a question in my mailbag this week, and it was the last question in the mailbag. So you have to read all the way through it, and it's up on NHL.com now. Hopefully you did read all the way through it. If I could pick one player to go to the All-Star game, my pick that should go to the All-Star game, who would it be? And obviously I took it as not any of the players that were already selected for the All-Star weekend. I have my answer out there. Do you have a player? I'll give you mine after. Do you have a player?
Yeah, I have, how many are left, right? 12, right? I have 12 players. But if I had to pick one, it's Mikko Rantanen.
Okay.
He's been crazy good. Ever since I saw him in Finland, he scored a hat trick. And at the Nokia Arena in Tampere, they're singing his name. It was one of the best moments of the year so far in the Global Series game against Columbus. But like when you look at what he's done with the absences that Colorado has had, he's carried that team, just completely put them on their back and said, all right, I don't know who I'm playing with today. I don't know who I'm playing with tomorrow. I don't know if they're NHL guys. I don't know if they're Colorado Eagle guys. I don't know who they're going to be, but I'll tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to score, or I'm going to get an assist, or I'm going to do something else to help the Colorado Avalanche win. And he's done that on a nightly basis.
Yeah, he, you know, in fact, I wrote about him. Our Super 16 runs Thursday, and this week we're doing team MVPs for all the 16 teams that are ranked. And the Avalanche, who have been struggling, obviously, they pull in at number 15 this week. And I had to write about them, and it was the choice of who was going to be their MVP. Who do I think it is? And it's close. Mikko Rantanen and Cale Makar, who is their all-star rep right now. But I went with Rantanen. I mean, 27 goals. He's 22 even strength goals. He's been fantastic. So I agree with you on that. But I'm going to go into the Pacific Division. The guy that I think absolutely needs to be at All-Star Weekend is Trevor Zegras. Troy Terry is their representative from the Anaheim Ducks. There might be candidates who are more deserving than Trevor Zegras for the seasons that they're having. I mean, Rantanen obviously is one, you know, I mean, of course it's a different division, but Zegras, you know, his numbers are solid, 31 points, 41 games. So you got to give him that. He's on a bad team right now, but this guy is the ultimate NHL star right now. He crosses all kinds of generations. Kids love him. Adults love him. Old people love him. Fans of all ages love this guy. He is a star. Put Trevor Zegras at Beach Fest in All-Star Weekend in a skills competition, doing whatever it is, right? Is he not the perfect? Is it not perfect? I mean, you could make a logo out of All-Star Weekend with Trevor Zegras at Beach Fest. And that's what this weekend is about. That's what All-Star Weekend is about. It's about selling the game. It's about selling the stars and the future stars of the game. Zegras showed up last year at All-Star Weekend. He wasn't an All-Star, but he showed up. He was in the skills competition. He absolutely should be at All-Star Weekend. He is a superstar in the National Hockey League.
He's a treasure, Dan.
He is.
That's what you're looking for. He's a treasure. And look, you can have your say. There's voting going on right now. Go to NHL.com. You can vote. I believe the final rosters are going to be announced a week from tomorrow. So next Thursday, but don't hold me to that. But I believe that's what the calendar says. And you don't want to go to NHL.com starting tomorrow. Fire up the old Twitter machine and you get to vote on Twitter. So you got to have your voice heard. It's like real politics. You can't complain if you don't vote. So go vote. Put your guy in, and we'll see where the cards land.
Quickly, before we get to Tom Galitti, our colleague with NHL.com, covers the Capitals. We talked a lot about the Capitals, Ovechkin and Backstrom and Wilson with him, along with a lot of other things. I wanted to ask you this question, and I guess it can be formed in two different ways. Biggest positive, biggest negative. So the biggest, what's more of a surprise to you in a positive way? The Seattle Kraken this season through the first half of the season, or the New Jersey Devils through the first half of the season? Which team is more surprising with their success and where they are right now in their standings to you, Sean?
I'm going to go with the New Jersey Devils. It might be recency bias. It might be location bias. It might be the fact that I see almost all of their games. I expected the New Jersey Devils to be really bad.
Bad, huh?
They're not. Yeah, no, their goaltending didn't do it for me. I didn't think they were going to be anywhere close to what they are. And then on top of that, like I think the teams are almost equal, but then it's the star power, right? It's the Jack Hughes, it's the Jesper Bratt, it's Dawson Mercer had two goals last night. I'm not putting him in a star power with
Nico. You gotta mention
Nico Hischier. So Hughes in his last 82 games has 100 points.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. There's not too many players that you're going to run across in the league and say, what do you have in your last 82 games? Does it add up to 100? Not too many. So it's that, right? It's Dougie Hamilton on the back end. They've surprised me in almost every facet of their game, and they play like lunatics. Like they try and skate people out of buildings, and I love that because it's wild at times. Like I'm sure our good friend Lindy Ruff sometimes wants to pull out his hair, but they play a system, but their system is predicated on outskating you and wearing you down, you know, and that was the game last night against the Canes, right? The third period, they came back and they won that game. So it's the entertainment and the star value, I think, that pushes them ahead of the Kraken.
See, I'm going to go the other direction with Seattle. I 100% agree with you what you're saying about the Devils, except I didn't expect them to be bad this season. I thought that they were taking steps in the right direction last season. Jack Hughes in particular, Jesper Bratt in particular, were taking steps in the positive direction. I expected them to be a team that was, I don't want to say in the playoffs, but certainly hovering around a playoff spot halfway through the season because of, you know, that trend that they were on last year. It's obviously harder to do it from the start of the season. It's a lot easier to do it when you're out of it, as they were. But I saw positive things from them. I saw nothing positive from the Kraken last year. I mean, there was nothing there. They made some nice moves in the offseason, adding a guy like Burakovsky, Oliver Bjorkstrand, and obviously bringing Matty Beniers in full time makes them a better team. But I did not even come close to thinking that at this point in the season, the Seattle Kraken, you know, would be a team that would be not just, Sean, not just in a playoff spot, firm in a playoff spot right now, 7 points ahead of, they're 5 points ahead right now as we talk of the Calgary Flames. They're 7 points ahead of the Edmonton Oilers, and the Oilers are the second wild card right now as we speak. And they've played 40 games with 52 points. They've won 6 in a row. I didn't see this coming at all. We talked about where, you know, what they are right now, and that even surprises me more. You talk about star power with New Jersey. There isn't that in Seattle, and they continue to just get it done. So I have to say that it's the Kraken to me who are more surprising at this point than the Devils.
Yeah, and look, I mean, they're so deep up front that Shane Wright is excess needs. He's been sent down back to juniors finally after, you know, being all over the place, being with them, not playing, going to the AHL on a condition assignment, going to World Juniors where he did not have a great World Juniors, and then going to back to the OHL and being traded in one of several blockbusters across the Canadian Hockey League. There were like 3 Herschel Walker level trades back in the day. But like, here's 9 draft picks and 4 players.
Yeah, wasn't there a trade that involved like 15 draft picks over the course of the next 8 years or something? Yeah, like that.
It's been crazy. They're all loading up for the Memorial Cup. It's the best. Junior hockey is absolutely the best.
It's insane.
So he's in the OHL and they don't need him. And that's just how good they've been. The consensus number one, who became the number 4 pick, ends up not being able to play for them when everybody thought he was going to be the answer. They don't need him. So they can season him and let him have, you know, he'll probably have 80 points before the season's over in juniors, because he's been playing at such a high level of competition. So they've been a great story. We flip a coin, but yeah, to me, the Devils have entertained me far more.
All right, real fast before we get to Tom, our interview with Tom, surprise in a negative way, the Florida Panthers or the Colorado Avalanche, which surprises you more, the team that hasn't really found traction? And we know the reason for the Avalanche. It's an obvious reason that they haven't really found traction.
So for that reason, it's the Panthers.
Yeah, right. It probably has to be, right? Yeah.
They've been healthy for the most part. You know, I thought Paul Maurice was going to have a huge impact on them, you know, and put in a system where they were going to win games. They were going to shut teams down. These two teams played each other last night. They played each other on Tuesday night, and it was a microcosm.
Florida did whatever it could to try to blow that game.
Yeah, go up 3-0. Bobrovsky looks really shaky. They end up at 3-3 or 4-4. And then Tkachuk, who's been really good for them and is their all-star, scores on a power play, and they walk away with 2 points that they did not. Paul Maurice will tell you this. I'm not making this up. They didn't deserve, but they really needed. I still think Colorado is going to be good. I have them higher than everybody else in the Super 16.
You do. Way higher.
Yeah. I still think they're going to be good. Like, the pieces are there. And you know, Gorgiev wasn't good last night, but he's been good for them. Better than I thought he was going to be. And they're going to start adding pieces back. It's going to snowball. And some of these guys are going to be fresh because they've been out so long, right? After the playoffs and everything else. There's a little bit of hangover, but I think it's more injuries. And when they figure it out, I'll tell you this, there's nobody that's sitting above them in the standings right now that's saying, oh boy, I hope I draw Colorado in the first round of the playoffs. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, no. And I don't think we're at that point yet where you're like that concerned over if the Avalanche are going to make the playoffs. They still have, you know, 43 games left to play as we speak right now. The other thing with Florida that's alarming to me is that they've scored 3.25 goals per game, 3.26 goals per game, and yet they've still lost more than they've won. So they're scoring what you need to score. The average goals in the NHL right now is like 6.3 something. They're scoring what looks like enough to win every game on average, but they're giving up about 3.5 per game. And their penalty kill hasn't been good. Whereas if you look at Colorado, they're not scoring a lot, but they've got all these guys that have been in and out of the lineup, but they're not giving up a lot either. So, and that's to me where you can look at it and say, hey, as long as we continue to play strong defensively and get better goaltending, and Georgiev has been solid for the most part for the balance of the season, you eventually think they'll figure it out.
You only gave me two answers. The true answer is the Vancouver Canucks.
Well,
and they showed it again last night,
yeah.
Up 3-0 against Pittsburgh, you know, with a goalie playing his first game. And they coughed it right up. I think it's like the ninth time they've coughed up a multiple goal lead. Like, that's the game where if you're Jimmy Rutherford or Patrick Alvin, you say, you know what? Maybe this isn't our year. Like, we just don't have what it takes. I've seen this, or I've heard this song one too many times this year. I'm gonna mix up the jukebox a little bit and see if anybody wants to buy my records.
Yeah. Let's get to that on the other end, on the other side of our interview here with Tom Gallitti. We were able to chat with our buddy Tom, colleague with NHL.com. We talked about the Capitals and a number of other things surrounding the Metropolitan Division, a little bit of trophy tracker stuff as well. And we're running our trophy trackers on NHL.com at the midpoint trophy trackers this week. Here's the interview with Tom. So I got to tell you, I didn't know if Nick Backstrom was going to play again. I really didn't. Yet here he is back in the lineup, back playing for the Capitals. Is that one of the more amazing things of the season, really?
I think so. There was a lot of questions about whether he was going to play again when he had the hip resurfacing surgery back in June. We found out we were at Stanley Cup final, and that was like, we knew he was having some issues with his hip, but when you hear that surgery and you look at players who have tried to come back from it, only one in the NHL had made it back previously, Ed Jovanovski. And, you know, it's been, even the Capitals didn't know at the start of the season when he would play. And you'd hear things like, maybe he'll be back in time for the playoffs. And here we are, you know, January, and he's back. And, you know, it's going to take him some time to get back into the groove of playing and being in like game situations. You know, it's hard to jump on, you know, in the middle of the season like this, but it's just great to see him back playing. An amazing story, I think. Yes.
Yeah. And you talk to some people about how difficult it is. I mean, it's shocking how much it impacts you. To me, it's a testament, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it, how tough Nick Backstrom is. Like, it's not a part of his game that's really celebrated much, because it's not a physical part, but he's been so durable and so tough, and to come back this early from what he's done, I think is maybe the biggest testament to that.
Going on that, I mean, the last 2 years, the guy was playing in pain, and he really didn't, I mean, you knew it, he didn't look right, but he didn't say much. And he's admitted that, like, I didn't really say how much it was bothering me. But then you find out after the fact, the guy couldn't play with his kids. He couldn't tie his shoes. These are things that, you know, not in normal life. And this surgery, as much about playing as it was about playing, was really more about him trying to get back to a quality of life. And now you can tell he is pain-free when you watch him skate, or when you watch him walk. And so I think it's just like a freedom for him. After 2 years of dealing with the pain, to be able to do things pain-free, like, you could see that there's something there that wasn't there the last couple of years, you know, late in the year, 2 years ago. And then when he tried to come back last year. So it really is a testament to him that he played through pain, and then the work that he went through to come back and get into a situation where he can play again.
So I'll preface this question by recognizing the fact that you're not a doctor, nor do you play one on television. Who gets back faster to their game, Nick Backstrom or Tom Wilson? Nick Backstrom coming off the hip resurfacing, and Tom Wilson now back in the lineup too, coming off the ACL surgery. We've seen guys coming off ACL surgery where it takes them a long time. We don't know about Nick Backstrom because of this surgery that he had, but who do you think gets back to their game quicker?
I think it'll be Tom Wilson, but going with what you just said about ACL surgery, usually the first year back from ACL surgery, you don't see the player 100% of the player that you, doesn't mean they don't feel healthy. It just, it takes some time. We've seen it in other sports too, where it just takes time for the guy to get back into the full swing of things. But Tom did take his time with this. He probably could have been back maybe in a month or so, earlier, and really wanted to make sure that he was 100, you know, that he was ready to come back and play. So I think we could see more of him, and he can do things if he's not scoring, where he can be physical and make an impact in other ways. And I think, you know, Nick, I think the feel will come back for Nick, but I think he just really has to get back in the flow of the games. And it's when you're coming off a major, you know, there's question marks about in your mind, like, you know, Edge Obanoski, who was the one player before him that came back, said, you know, when he came back, you know, he was a physical player and he had to question whether he would be able to survive or hit. And he was able to do that. And once he got that through, he could play. And Nick is going to have other things about getting the feel of the game back. I mean, really, they only had I was thinking about this today. They only had two full practices before they came back and played. And one of them, they were spread out over like 3 weeks, just the way the schedule was for the team. So they had one, you know, Tuesday this week where they had a full practice. The first time Nick Backstrom practiced with the power play since last year in the playoffs was yesterday. So those things are going to help. But I do think that Tom, you know, and like you said, I'm not a doctor. I did stay at a Holiday Inn somewhere, I think Tom, maybe just because of the physical aspect of the game, he'll get back into that. That'll help him be more involved quicker, but it's going to be a process for both.
So in retrospect, and we can have perfect 2020 hind vision. Did you expect with Nicky and Tom Wilson being out, John Carlson being hurt for an extended period now, other absences, that the Washington Capitals would be knocking on the door of the Devils and the Carolina Hurricanes at the top of the division?
No, I don't know if I thought the Devils would be at the top of the division among the teams, but I thought that it would be at the beginning of the season. But I thought that they would be, the Capitals would have a challenge to be there, but they could. The thing is, they made some moves in the offseason that were going to help them. And one of them was, you know, signing Dylan Strome, and the other was signing Connor Brown, who is kind of supposed to be help fill in for Tom Wilson, but then Connor Brown got hurt and then all these other guys got hurt. So they really had a bigger challenge even than I thought they would have when the season started. And we saw, like you said, John Carlson is out now. He also missed some time early in the year. TJ Oshie missed a bunch of time. Dmitry Orlov missed a bunch of time, and they've done a really good job, really started kind of turning things around in early December. They had a meeting and basically said, listen, you know, I know we have injuries and stuff, but if we keep going the way we're going, we're not going to make the playoffs. We have to turn it around now. And they've made a commitment since then, and they pushed themselves right back into the middle of the race. Now they have to stay there and have to do it while working these guys. Two of their top six, top nine forwards are going to have to kind of jump in the middle of this and find a way to keep going what they've been doing.
Is Dylan Strome sort of like that unheralded guy who's really helped glue it, you know, piece this together for the Capitals?
Oh, yeah, he definitely, you know, he's had a really good season. He's got, I think, 31 points, something like that. He's played a lot of the year playing on the top line with Ovechkin, played in the first power play unit. These things, you know, without him this year, he's one of those guys you don't know where they would be. Another guy is Erik Gustafsson. Like, he's just been unbelievable on defense for them with John Carlson out. And now he's playing, you know, top power play, and he's done these things in the past, but you know, they signed him maybe to be a third pair guy, play maybe on the second power play. And now he's doing things for them and scoring big goals for them. So they've had a lot of guys like those two guys who both came from Chicago, which is kind of interesting. It helped them get through this.
Is this maybe, I mean, I know he's won a Stanley Cup, but is this maybe the best job Peter Laviolette's done as a coach, considering what's happened? And full value here, we'll talk about it in a little while. Not a lot of recognition among us in the trophy tracker voting that we did. But, you know, and not from me either, but now as I listen to you talk and I think about it and I think about all the distractions with the Ovi chased for 800 and 802, which you are intimately familiar with, and congratulations again on all the work you did with that. But is this maybe one of the top coaching jobs that he's done?
Yeah, he's done an excellent job. I mean, he did an excellent job in the first half last year too, when they were missing Backstrom and a bunch of other players and, you know, didn't really kind of get much recognition for it. And I did vote for him in the trophy tracker, I think maybe fourth or fifth among the coaches. I mean, there's some guys you just couldn't ignore how good their teams are doing, obviously Montgomery and Boston being one of them. But yeah, I think he's done a really good job to keep the guys focused, when, especially when it could have gone off the rails there. You know, they lost a game in Calgary in early December where Darcy Kemper got hurt and they lost Martin Ferravari, and things were already bad. And you're like, these guys are hurt. And like, you thought maybe this is going to be where maybe they're going to lose touch, and they come back the next game and they beat Edmonton. And that was what, after they had that meeting, and that kind of has sparked what they've done here since then. And Peter, I think, deserves a lot of credit. He made a joke last week. Like, we had a meeting with our leadership group. It was basically or the leadership group that was healthy. It's like, it's basically me and Ovi having a cup of coffee because everybody else was hurt. But it was exaggerating a little bit, but that's kind of how it was at that time with some of the guys that they had hurt. So he definitely deserves some credit for getting them through this, and the players do as well. But it's not an easy situation for Peter. Not really. It hasn't really been talked about him a lot either, is that his contract is up after this year. So there's no security for him beyond this season. And they haven't won a playoff series with him as coach. And that's another thing that hump that they'll have to get over. First they have to worry about securing a playoff spot. But I think he's done to this point one of the better jobs in the league this year, for sure.
All right. So Sean, you open the door with the Laviolette question about trophy tracker stuff, which we are doing this week on NHL.com. And no, I also did not have Peter Laviolette in my top five. And now listening to you, Tom, and hearing about the Capitals and where they're at and thinking about it more, I kind of regret that. So I will, we get it right sometimes, we get it wrong sometimes. And I think I got it wrong on that one, but I think I got it right on this one. And I'm in the minority, but I had Alex Ovechkin as number one on my Hart Trophy ballot this for right now. Our Hart Trophy tracker runs on Friday. It will not be Alex Ovechkin, who is the favorite among all of us who voted. And there were 14 of us who voted, but I had Alex Ovechkin won. And with all we've talked about here, Tom, Laviolette, Strom, Gustafson, Connor Sherry's been great. It really has been Alex Ovechkin's show. He carried them for a long time here back into this playoff mix. So that's why what do you think about that? Alex Ovechkin as a Hart Trophy favorite.
A year ago at this time, halfway through the season, he was the favorite. They went through this. I think he was number one on our list. They went through a bunch of injuries, and that was the reason why. This year, he has not been getting the same recognition. And really, I think I put him in my top five, but I didn't have him at the top. I really like he's had a harder challenge this year because last year, Evgeny Kuznetsov had a great year first half of the season, and Kuznetsov hasn't been as consistent as half. And so Alex has done more. He's played more with Strome because they've been trying to find better fits and border balance with some of the guys that they've had hurt. And that definitely, and it hurt last year, the first half they had Tom Wilson, which I think was a big part of that line of Ovechkin, Kuznetsov and Wilson carried them the first half of the season when they had injuries. And well, they didn't have Wilson and Obi didn't play with Kuznetsov, so you're right. Maybe he deserves more credit even than I have given him for how good a first half he had. He had a better first half last year, but he still had a really pretty, he was still among the league leaders in goals. And as we know, he's not getting younger. He's 37. So it's kind of crazy what he's been doing. He's going to close on, he's one goal from his another 30 goal season and looking at like he could get 50 again this year.
I'm going to give away a little of the plot. Obi got two first place votes. They're both on this Zoom.
There we go.
And it wasn't me who was around him the most of the three of us.
See, I was leaving that part out, Tom, for people to figure out on their own, but now you gave it away. But no, I had him at number one. Look, I don't think we're giving away state secrets if we say who number one is before Friday. It's the young man who plays in Edmonton, Connor McDavid. He didn't get – he got 11 out of the 14 first-place votes. There was a – Jason Robertson vote, and then there were the two Ovi votes. But that, to me, that's the kind of year that Ovechkin's been having, and I think it goes beyond goals, right? The goals have been really important to the Capitals, but to me, from the outside, and you could probably speak to this better, is he's been more of a steadying influence than maybe he's ever been because of the way the odds have been stacked against him, because of the way that everything was focused on him for so long. I thought he's done a really good job of basically saying there are no distractions. I don't care what the distractions are. There are none for us.
I agree with that. And I also think he's had experience with that because he's been going through stuff like this for a few years now. And, this was bigger. We're talking about not only the injuries, but also the milestone he was going about. And he tried not to make it about himself and he tried to make, but it's hard. I mean, and you can also see, I think the team, it coincided with their turnaround. The team kind of rallied around it. They were like, Ovi's doing these things and these are pretty cool. There's team pictures and there's, videos of them, things that they were doing after he had these milestones. And this was it all coincided with the turnaround. I think it was a fun time for them. And it was a part of why they were able to turn it around. I think they were like, let's get this let's help them get this. And let's build around this. And I think that, and the good thing is that once he passed Gordie Howe for second, it hadn't stopped. He hasn't stopped scoring and they haven't stopped winning games. So, I think they haven't played as well maybe in the last week or so, but I think that it was definitely part of the catalyst, and he was a big part of that. And I also think that Peter Laviolette deserves a little credit for that as well, because Alex was maybe not having, he was going through a little bit of a struggle offensively, finding some chemistry at one point. And he kept on putting him out there for those empty net goals. And people were made a big deal about how many empty net goals he got there that one week. But it got him going. Then he started scoring goals all over. Like a few times he put the puck in the net, and he just started scoring even more. And that kind of has carried them through to this point as well.
Well, I mean, you know how it goes, right? Goal scorers got to see the puck go in the net. And then all of a sudden they feel great. It doesn't matter if there's a goalie in the net too, right?
The only one he didn't want was 802. He tried to pass it away. He didn't want it. It was funny. And Kuznetsov passed it back to him. But other than that, he doesn't mind scoring an empty net goal.
All right. So quick, let's look at the Metro, though, the Metropolitan Division. So we've talked a lot about the Capitals here. We know it's really a six-team race, and there's five teams that could get in. And right now, if you look at it, you know, the way it's going right now, it certainly looks like five teams will get in, unless you know Florida finds it here, or Buffalo can make a big time run. Otherwise, it looks like it's going to be five from the Metropolitan Division again. But there's six teams we're looking at: Carolina, New Jersey, New York, Rangers, Washington, Pittsburgh, and the Islanders. So, Tom, I'm going to ask you, who gets left out?
That's a tough question right now. I mean, right now, I thought going into the season the Islanders were going to make it, and lately they've not been as sure about them. I just thought like they were going to have a bounce back year. And it was looking like, you know, a month ago, the Capitals would not be in. But the Capitals, I think the Capitals are going to be in now. So I think right now, if I had to look at it, the Islanders, I thought the Devils also about a month ago were definitely going to get in, and I'm not as sure anymore, although they've righted the ship pretty good since the turn of the, you know, since we got to 2023 here. So that's a good sign, I think, for a team like them who haven't been through this before. But there's still some steps when you haven't. You have a lot of guys who haven't been through the thing. There's still steps. As the year goes on, it gets harder, as you know. So those are things, you know, we're going to get to the All-Star break here, and then it's going to go up another level after that trade deadline. So there's still some things to improve, but it's some good positive signs for the Devils the last week or so.
Look, this is all the kiss of death. Whatever I say, expect the other thing to happen. I put Carolina first in the power rankings last week, and they haven't won a game since. So, but it was a huge win for them, right? They gave up two shorthanded goals. They fell behind numerous times on the road against a battle-tested team, and the Devils were able to come out of it. And like, I look at that, and I'm like, that might be the win that they need. That might be the message into the room that says, oh, you know what? We are for real. Like, you know, 13 games in a row. To win 13 games in a row in this league, you're for real. But I think playing at a 375% win percentage for a long period of time through December and early January eroded some of that confidence. And, you know, maybe it came back with a win like that. But to me, this is just like the Metro's an absolute mosh pit. Like somebody is going to get destroyed, and they won't deserve it because they're all awesome teams.
Yeah, and like Dan said, if Florida figures it out in here in the second half, or Buffalo, which has shown some positive signs lately, if they, then it makes it more complicated. If only four of those six teams make it in, it's really going to be a battle. I think it's going to be a very interesting year in the Metro regardless, five of the six or four of the six, but four of the six makes it really tough, because then we're talking about two of those six not getting in.
You're never going to count them out. Like they're a team, the Panthers are a team right now, if they were to rip off 10 straight wins, nobody would be surprised. Right? Because they have the talent to do it, and they they can. It's just, they've just been so wildly inconsistent. But if we go back to what I asked you, Tom, about the Metro, like so much of me wants to say Pittsburgh won't make it, right? I mean, like so much of me wants to say that I think there's teams that are deeper than them. The goaltending, if it can, you know, Jerry's got to stay healthy. There's questions there. They've been banged up. But I just can't count the Penguins out. Like, you know, I just can't do it. So I again fall back on looking at the Islanders and saying, do they have enough? I don't know. I actually think, and, you know, correct me, you know, curious your opinion, that with this spot, with these wild card spots, or how this is going to shake out, if it is going to be the five teams out of the six in the Metro, it might come down to who does the best at the trade deadline.
Yeah, you're right. And as you were talking about that, what you were just saying, I was thinking Lou, if he can, is going to try to do something big. I think he tried to do something in offseason and he couldn't, where with signing guys, but I think we're going to see him try to make a trade for a big forward on that team. You know, some people don't really think about him, but he's made a lot of big moves in his over his long career. and I could see him doing something. And that could, like you said, that could change the balance of power if someone gets a big player at the deadline. And what team does that? It'll be interesting to see.
We want to say we're so far from the deadline, but we're not. But with as tight as everything is, it's going to be really hard for teams to decide what they want to do, right? Like the Islanders are a perfect example. If they're on that fence, right? And then, okay, so you get in and you get in as the second wild card. And I know you don't think like this, but you're playing a Bruins team that is on a historic pace. Like right now, they're going to beat the record for the most wins in a season, you know, Tampa Bay and Detroit. Like, and I know Tampa Bay lost, so I guess that's the hope. But it would be really hard to be sitting in that 7 or 8 spot and be like, I'm going to push all my chips in the middle. I think I can beat that Bruins team in a 7-game series. That's a pretty tough call to make.
You're right. And I think there already is some of that. Like, I don't want to be like, one, I want to get in, but when I get in, I don't want to be that second wild card because I don't want to play Boston. But there's a long way to go in the season. Boston's already surprised me, and they're an unbelievable team, but I'll be surprised if we don't see some hiccup for them along the way here. And you usually want to get your hiccups out of the way earlier in the season than later. So we'll see what they do. And we'll also see if they make any trades there.
Yeah, they're going to be interesting. I mean, you're right, Tom. I do think there's going to be a hiccup coming, and the Tampa Bay Lightning, obviously, from a couple of years ago, are the cautionary tale of what a great regular season means. So we'll see how it goes. Tom, thanks so much for hopping on with us. Really good stuff, all right?
Thanks for having me.
Good stuff there with Tom. So, Sean, we hit on a lot of – we teased the trophy tracker stuff. You and I agree. Alex Ovechkin, Hart Trophy. It's not often that we agree on things like this, but I'm glad that we do. It makes me feel better that we've come to a consensus agreement here, Sean.
It happens every once in a while. Even warring countries sometimes agree on certain things. So we're good for a couple of weeks.
So do we agree on Norris Trophy? Josh Morrissey, Winnipeg Jets, was my number one.
No.
All right, who'd you have?
Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, he's been good too. Can't argue with that one.
The guy's a monster. There's only 3 players in the league that have played more minutes than him. He's carried them offensively. He's been better defensively than he's ever been in his career. Look, Josh Morrissey's a great story, and he has the whole ad campaign of Norrissey. Josh Norrissey, which is going to get him some votes just because of its creativity. He's been really, really good for them. But Rasmus Dahlin is entering crazy town territory when it comes to defensemen. Like, he's up there with Makar, just a complete game changer. He's the best all-around defenseman in the league right now, with Cale Makar being the best defenseman in the league, but hasn't shown it as much because he hasn't had the opportunity to do it because he hasn't been surrounded with the same amount of talent. Like, when I took pen to paper and I said Norris Trophy, Dahlin, then I had to start thinking.
Dahlin was number 2 for me behind Josh Morrissey, who's got 39 assists, 46 points. He's playing more than 23 minutes a night. The team has been strong all year long. He has been their driver, their leader. There's no question about it. So I'm not gonna sit here and say you're wrong about Rasmus Dahlin.
Well, because I'm not. But
I can't argue against Rasmus Dahlin. I went with Morrissey because I just love the season he's having on the team. That, you know, you look at it and say they are in a lot of ways where they are for a lot of reason being him. And you could say the same thing about Dahlin, but the Jets are in a better position. All right, let's go to Vezina. If we go to Vezina, what do you got?
Vezina was tough. But it wasn't that tough. It's Linus Ullmark.
So we're 2 for 3 here. We agree on Linus Ullmark. All right.
Dude,
so,
I think there was one person that didn't. I think there were no universal 14 for 14 voters for any award. But I think Linus Ullmark, if memory serves correctly, was as close as you could get. I think it was 13 out of 14.
Find me that one.
I know. We'll hunt him down.
Yeah, hunt him down. Well, you know who it is. All right. Speaking of Linus Ullmark, we'll go to the Jack Adams. I had Jim Montgomery. And listening to Tom before, I do regret not having Peter Laviolette in my top 5. He wasn't. But Jim Montgomery, I mean, the season that the Bruins are having, first-year coach and everything he's done there, to me, it was a slam dunk.
Yeah, again, so we're 3 out of 4. But yeah, look, it's all culture, right? And it's when you think about the Bruins at the beginning of the year, you didn't know if Bergeron was going to be back. Marchand was hurt. McAvoy was hurt. Grizzlick was hurt. Like, these are key components. They survived it all. He's getting the best out of David Pastrnak. He's got all kinds of role players playing really well. If you're a coach, that might be the best room in the league to walk into because it runs itself.
Yeah.
Patrice Bergeron, before that, Zdeno Chara, they run that room. And you're never going to have any problems because it is the perfect culture. And he's just kind of tweaked it a little bit and done some stuff with it. How do you pick anybody else? Like, and we talked about Seattle a little earlier. Dave Hakstol was either fifth on my ballot or he wasn't on my ballot. And that tells you how deep the coaches go this year. When you think about what some of these coaches have done, either really good coaches in a new place, like Peter DeBoer,
yeah.
Yeah. And then you think about like Lindy Ruff, who's completely turned things around in New Jersey. And then you think about a guy like, to me, I hate this award because it's always about who was really crappy last year and is now really good. Although Montgomery doesn't really fit that mold because the Bruins were decent last year, but he's a new coach. But like coaches like Jared Bednar and Rod Brind'Amour get no credit for what they do. Mike Sullivan's the best coach in the league, in my opinion. He never is considered for this award because he's the best coach in the league and the Penguins are always competitive, no matter who they have, how many people are hurt, whatever it is. Those coaches never get any consideration in this award.
Jared Bednar and Mike Sullivan were in my top five. And look at Jared Bednar or the Avalanche right now, you say, well, they're not in the playoffs. And everything that they've had to deal with, including a short offseason, and they're still even close, is remarkable. You know, like and they haven't had their captain all year. They haven't had Landeskog all season. Pretty strong. And Sullivan, with everything that they've had to deal with injury-wise, and, you know, they've been streaky. I get it. But he continues to help keep that room together. So I had those two in my top five. All right. Calder Trophy. I'm going to throw it out to you. Who'd you have first?
I went Panarin.
Okay.
Just because he's having such an impact. Not only is he leading in scoring, but he's leading his team. Like, there's other players that are having a really good year, but they're not the focal point. He's the focal point, and that makes it so much harder. The only other one I would throw in there would be Logan Thompson, just because of the impact that he's had, and I really debated 1-2 there. Kochetkov at that point had not had enough games to me, and since we've done the voting, he's come back down to earth a little bit. But that was kind of the defining point. I guess you could make that argument for Logan Thompson that he's the focal point of the Golden Knights, but they have a lot of really good players. And we've discussed Seattle a lot. Seattle doesn't. They have a lot of parts. And Berniers is becoming a superstar. And that's really hard to do as a rookie.
So I didn't go with any of those for one. I went with Owen Power. And the reason I went with Owen Power was one of the hardest things to do in the National Hockey League is to be a young defenseman, 19, 20-year-old defenseman, playing almost 24 minutes a night. And no, he's not the focal point because we've already talked about you winning the argument on Rasmus Dahlin. Rasmus Dahlin is the focal point of that defense, but Dahlin plays 26 minutes, Power plays 24. So he's not playing that much less than Rasmus Dahlin. Dahlin's having a bigger impact, which you would expect. But Owen Power playing 24 minutes a night for a team that's in a playoff chase and playing him well, being a plus player, I think that says something. It says a lot about the player that he is, and that is why I went with Owen Power for that award.
Yeah, and I don't have any issue with that. And to me, that raises Donnie Granato's Jack Adams stake even more. And he was almost ignored. He was in my top five. I think he's done a beautiful job in Buffalo. All the crap that they've had to deal with, the huge snowstorm, the stuff with the Bills that he handled perfectly. Mike Zeisberger had a great column on Sunday about how Granato handled that with his team and how emotional it was and how emotional it was for him because he went through similar things with his health. Just fantastic. So Owen Power has been great, and he hasn't gotten the notice that he should because he's a prototypical defenseman. Like, he's not scoring a ton of points. He's not doing a ton of stuff. He just does everything well, and he does it. The biggest thing about a defenseman, especially when you're young, is don't get noticed. And if you don't get noticed, you don't win the rookie of the year.
He's been good. He's been great. All right. Last thing before we get out of here, we talked, you mentioned before we got to the interview with Tom about the Canucks being a disappointment. So I got, you know, what I wanted to get to was I got a question in my mailbag for this week to rank the seven Canadian teams from closest to furthest away of winning the Stanley Cup. So one through seven, who's the closest to seven, who's the furthest at this point right now? Vancouver was sixth on my list. Montreal was seventh because we know they're in a rebuild, right? And it's the very early stages of a rebuild, so they have to be the furthest away. But I looked at Vancouver and I'm like, where are they going? What's the direction here? You know, Bo Horvat going to be traded? Probably, possibly. You know, they have JT Miller signed long-term. You know, do they have enough? They have some guys. Who's the coach? There's so many questions. Do they have the right guys in place? Clearly right now it's looking like they don't. There's so many questions here. So I went on this Leafs list. I had the Leafs being one, because I do think that if the Leafs can get over that hump in the first round, they can go on a long run. They are that close. The Jets being two, their core is in place. It's a win now mode. Edmonton, you got McDavid and Draisaitl. They need to beef up the D, need better goaltending. But they went to the Western Conference final last year. They should be good. They should be a playoff team. Calgary is four. Ottawa is five. Their defense needs a lot of work, but their forward group looks good. They look like they have a solid core that they're building there. But then there was Vancouver, and I just couldn't put them over any of those teams.
No, I agree. I don't know how you and I was really high on him. Look, Thatcher Demko wasn't good before he got hurt, and now he's out, and that complicates things. But you know, they can't hold the lead, right? And to me, that's the most concerning thing. That speaks to the identity of your team. Like, you're able to go out and get a lead, and then you can't hold it. And that's a character thing. And that's hard. That's harder than skill to fix, in my opinion. And like I said, Jimmy Rutherford said it this week, like, they're hard against the cap. He doesn't know which direction they're going in. Selling would certainly alleviate some of that, and let them kind of start over. And if they do, then they're further away. I wouldn't argue with much of the way that you ranked it. I don't think you can. Look, you can flip-flop Calgary and Edmonton. I understand McDavid and Draisaitl kind of maybe putting them over the hump. But what, you know, and they beat Calgary. So, you know, maybe I'd put Winnipeg ahead of Toronto. I think I think they're closer, and I think they're closer for one reason.
Goaltending.
Yeah. And we know how important it is in the playoffs. And you know, do you walk into the playoffs with the Toronto Maple Leafs and be like, I love their goaltending. They're going to get, and then you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're drawing a buzzsaw, right? Like, unless you somehow overtake the Bruins, you're drawing Tampa Bay in the first round again, or you're sliding down into that wild card, and then you're really taking your chances. There's no easy out. I think the path through the West might be a tiny bit easier. So for those two reasons, goaltending and ease of path, I think Winnipeg's closer right now.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. I think Toronto overall has more talent and is a better, just more skating talent. And we continue to pile up Jack Adams Award candidates, but Sheldon Keefe's done a really good job this year with that team too. Their defense has been in shambles, and their goaltending was able to hold up, but he hasn't gotten much credit. I don't know if he got a single vote in our Jack Adams Award trophy tracker, but he's done a terrific job there.
He did get a couple of votes, not a ton. And he has, again, they've been good for so long that, not great, but good, that I don't think he gets much credit. But, you know, we talked about the four coaches that are going. One of the things that made me really sad was Winnipeg lost last night. And we just talked about Connor Hellebuyck and how good he's been. And he gives up a seventh spot against Detroit going home. That cost Rick Bonus the opportunity to coach the Central Division. That's how close it was. You know, Pete DeBoer from Dallas gets to go, but it's winning percentage. And going into that game, Winnipeg was ahead, and then losing. They've played one less game, and Dallas winning kind of turned the tide there. But Rick Bonus at the All-Star game would have been fantastic. I think he's done an incredible job in Winnipeg, and just a hockey lifer, and he's never been. So it would have been awesome, and he would have had some great stories to tell. But now he gets a week off, so...
Well, I just want to tell you, I mean, last year it was Andrew Brunette was a coach at the All-Star Weekend, and so was Pete DeBoer with the Vegas Golden Knights. So maybe you don't want to go.
And you don't want to win the Jack Adams either.
That's true. Well, you want to win games, though. So, you know, who knows? But All-Star Weekend's coming up February 3rd and 4th. We will be there. We'll be doing some stuff from there as well. And this was fun, Sean. So, and I even gave you the W on Rasmus Dahlin.
You didn't give it to me. I earned it.
No, that's true. I conceded.
No, I earned it. That's okay. What happened. But we'll be at the beach next couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to get a little suntan while we do some podcasts with some NHL alumni and hopefully some players and with you and with our friends. Last year was great. We did it for the first time. I'm looking to top it this year.
I hope we will, but we got a few more before we go to Florida. So we'll be back next week. And until then, enjoy the hockey.